Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry. Sorry. We're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello and welcome to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily Podcast. Christmas is edging ever closer and that means only one thing. Yes, forget about your Brussels sprouts, forget about your pigs and blankets. We have 20, yep, count them, 20 Premier League games penciled in to wrap up 2021. But with simply so much Premier League action on the way in the days to come, in today's show, we are savouring the final sweet, sweet drops of the Carabao in 2021. The League Cup quarterfinals give us a quick break from the Premier League, and here on FSD, we are reviewing and previewing all the action from the last eight. Arsenal cruised on into the semi-finals with a 5-1 win over League One Sunderland. That's where we're going to be focusing as a review from last night. And then in part two, we'll be previewing all three games tonight. Three all Premier League clashes as the last four finally begins to take shape. Brentford play host to neighbours Chelsea. Leicester head up to Anfield. And Spurs take on West Ham. Right then, so despite it being midweek, there's still plenty to get through on today's show. And joining me, as ever, we have Mr. Wednesday, Ian Brannan. Ian, how's things?
Oh, yeah, yeah, and a special festive Wednesday. My last one before Christmas. In fact, all of our last Wednesdays before Christmas. But my last Football Social podcast before Christmas. And yes, great to be here, of course.
Wonderful stuff. I'm playing the role of Christmas hero today because Matt Pidd has been caught out doing some Christmas shopping. We have a substitute. It's going to be a busy Christmas period. Everyone needs to call in a favour or two over Christmas. And Joel Tudor is the man who has stepped up for us this morning. Welcome to Wednesday, Joel. How's things?
Oh, good. Drafted in on a deadline day, sailing like a little elf. But I'm here. I'm ready to give the gift of Christmas Wednesdays.
Great stuff, indeed. You're like the fella that turns up on Christmas morning with the tinfoil or the whatever you've forgotten to buy. So you've absolutely dug us out of a Christmas hole. Right, we're going to get stuck into this in terms of the Carabao Cup. Ian, pretty comfortable for Arsenal in the end last night. 5-1 win over League One Sunderland. Pretty much a wholesale change for Mikel Arteta in the starting lineup. Only Ben White and Martin Ødegaard kept their places from the win over Leeds at the weekend. Things are looking pretty rosy for Arteta. We're going to talk about some of the key individuals in just a second, but bounce back from that defeat to Liverpool to stay steady in the Premier League, got into the top four over Christmas, and now this was never probably, I'm not saying this as an arrogant Arsenal fan, but this was never really going to be a big issue, but every box is a box that needs ticking, lots of changes, some young players coming in, and Arsenal showed a nice bit of steel.
Yeah, and I'm based in Sunderland. I've got family who are big Sunderland fans, and we're talking about this game yesterday, and kind of coming off the back of Arsenal demolishing Leeds in their previous fixture, it was sort of quite good because all those who gave me a bit of stick for Arsenal battering Leeds immediately then had to face Arsenal themselves. So it's all gone quiet on that front this morning, funnily enough. But and we're talking actually about what the Arsenal team might be yesterday. And I was saying, you know, that it probably will make quite a lot of changes. And they did. But when you look at the team sheet, it was still obviously a very strong team with a lot of well-known names on it. So it wasn't like it was sort of unknowns and full of kids, youth team that we're not familiar with all making their debuts or anything like that. So it shows there's a fair bit of depth in the Arsenal team. Fairly routine, though, as you say. I don't think there's any surprise about the result. I don't think any Sunderland fan really kind of hoped that... everybody obviously hoped they'd win, but I don't think anybody realistically thought they would get much from the game. It probably went as everyone expected. But I think a lot of Sunderland fans were, though, despite being beaten 5-1, fairly pleased with the performance, particularly in the first half. I think they kept Arsenal fairly honest. And were it not for Broadhead getting injured, that he did at the end of the first half, and he was the goal scorer for Sunderland. It was 2-1 at half time, of course, and fairly close up to that point. Second half, Arsenal really pulled away and made a big difference. But no surprises in the result. I think Sunderland fans fairly happy with how the team performed on such a big stage, and certainly shows the difference between League One and the Premier League.
The two key figures, you'd say, for Arsenal last night, Joel, were Eddie Nketiah and Nicolas Pepe. So just want to have a quick look at Eddie Nketiah based on his performance last night. And he absolutely loves the League Cup. He's scored in every round for Arsenal so far this season. And he's got 8 goals in 7 League Cup games for the Gunners. A hat-trick last night, all real poachers' goals. There was a fantastic stat doing the round on Twitter last night, which is that every goal, every senior goal he's scored for Arsenal has come inside the box. He's never scored a long-range rasper for Arsenal so far. But you do get the sense with Nketiah that it's now or never for him. He's out of contract at the end of the season, and he finds himself in a strange situation because he's not in the same Hale End group as Bukayo Saka and Emil Smith-Rowe. He's a little bit older, and it's never really stuck for him in the first team. He does have, obviously, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Alexandre Lacazette in front of him, and, of course, Pepe that we're going to touch on in a second. But he's got 6 months left on his contract. When you look at his output in terms of what he's done in front of goal, 11 Premier League starts in 4 seasons, just 5 goals to go alongside that. Mikel Arteta said in his post-match that he wants him to stay, that he is going to be playing over Christmas when the games start coming thick and fast. Do you think this could be a bit of a kind of watershed moment for him, or do you just think inevitably maybe he won't make the grade because he's not a Saka or a Smith Rowe?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just about to go on to that contract point because I think he'd rejected a couple of contract offers from Arsenal. And I think it's probably due to the fact that he isn't getting the game time that he's wanting. And obviously, when he's seen the likes of Smith Rowe, Saka, or getting these long minutes in the first team, I mean, it is more difficult for a youngster trying to break into the striker position because they probably have way more pressure, way more eyes on them than ever compared to any other position in the team. Because you're not, obviously, every single game, you're the man who needs to get the goals. And for a young player, it's a difficult task to actually, you know, kick on, especially in such a big club like Arsenal. But he'll be encouraged by that. And I think looking at the situation at Arsenal in terms of their striking options, it's probably the best time for him to take his chance because obviously Lacazette, I'm not sure what his contract's like. I'm pretty sure he's got like less than a year left on it
as well. He's up
and obviously
Aubameyang.
Oh, he's up. Yeah, this is what I mean. So obviously he's probably on his way out potentially. Then you've got Aubameyang who's been pretty much alienated from the team at the moment. So it is looking like someone else is going to need to step up to the plate. And I mean, if he can start to string together a few games under his belt and obviously transfer this League Cup form into the Premier League form, then things could start to change very quickly. I think we've seen it in many different teams where I think the biggest one I always recall is when Rashford got called into the Man United team during the warm-ups when Anthony Martial got injured just before, I think, the Wolfsburg game at home. Oh, sorry, no, it was a Europa League game, and he ended up flying after that. I mean, the history tells itself after that. But sometimes these situations just need to happen. You need to have the cards to fall into your place a little bit. But like I said, I think last night was just a really good moment for him to make his mark and obviously let the club know that he's got the quality to actually be the man up top. But it's different scoring against, you know, League One proposition in comparison to Premier League proposition week in, week out. He's still a young player and he's still got plenty more opportunities. But I mean, I think it's a pivotal moment for him now, because it'll be very telling if Arteta is able to show a little bit of faith in him compared to, you know, the two strikers that he usually relies upon, who can't actually be relied upon too much at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see. But as we've seen, Arteta's definitely not afraid to dip into his youth. I mean, you've got Smith Rowe and Bakayo Saka, who are both permanent fixtures in that starting 11 now. And then obviously you have Balogun, who I think is also out of contract soon. So there's a lot of tinkering around to do with that squad at the moment. I think Arteta just needs to allow Nketiah to give him a bit of faith to see that he can actually do it week in, week out. But obviously for him to do that, you need to have minutes.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the picture, Ian, in terms of whether he will get game time or not, Arteta has said in his press conference last night that he will give him a chance. And Arsenal's next two games, Boxing Day away at Norwich and then on the 28th at home to Wolves, you'd look at those and say this is an opportunity. Moving further on, City at home on New Year's Day and then Spurs on January the 16th. Maybe by that stage, Aubameyang will be off the naughty step, or he'll go with the more set trio of Lacazette, Smith Rowe and Saka, or maybe Martinelli. But Nketiah has to seize this opportunity. Arteta is clearly trying to boost his confidence and saying, listen, there's a place there for you. There's maybe even a contract there for you if you can prove it. But Joel makes the key point there. He took his goals really well last night, but this is Sunderland. They're in League One, and this is a completely different ball game in the Premier League. And there is comparisons to other players, but generally speaking, when he's been given little bits and pieces in the Premier League, he has come up short, and it does look as if the picture is moving in a certain direction for him.
Yeah, he really needs to nail this opportunity now. I mean, if you've got a hat-trick to your name, as he has, and yes, it was against Sunderland, but still, he's got a hat-trick. He's probably got quite a few of their fans excited. It sort of puts a little bit of pressure on Arteta to really, you know, seriously consider him for those games coming up, especially when you consider the level of the opposition they're facing. You know, they're sort of lower-class games, with the best will in the world to Arsenal in the Premier League. You know, they're not against the top four, for example, and you know, it is an opportunity, and if they are struggling for goals and you've got somebody who's just scored a hat-trick, I mean, you've got a very, you know, strong battle there to sort of argue against playing a player like that, at least at some point. Now, Eddie Nketiah, of course, used to play for Leeds, and he got sent back to Arsenal, and he did very well in the EFL Cup, but didn't do very well anywhere else.
He loves it. He loves the Carabao. He loves it.
Yeah, recognise the story anywhere. Now, the thing with Eddie Nketiah was, at Leeds, and maybe this is, and now they play differently, and this was Bielsa's thing, and this is why Bielsa wasn't bothered about Nketiah, was that, yes, he took his chances, and yes, he scored goals, but he didn't contribute a right lot else. And yes, goals are what count at the end of it. But when you've got a game where you're having to grind stuff out, you know, when it's backs against the walls, when it's a real tricky sort of opposition, the thing with Nketiah was, in Bielsa's view, was that he didn't really help the play. He wasn't running to defend, for example. And like Leeds United's way is, it's, you know, everybody's an attacker, everybody's a defender, as we've seen, you know, and it's sprinting up and down. They run further than any team in the Premier League as per the stats. And Nketiah was great running forward, and he was great when there was a chance of a goal, and he was there in the penalty area and is a goal poacher. But he wasn't really delivering much else. And that was the thing. And my question would be, if you're a goal scorer, or if you're a striker, how much more of your game do you actually need than just scoring a goal? And it's obviously quite a lot in the modern era. You're not just a striker. You need to be able to defend. You need to be able to play in midfield a little bit, and all have that interchange. And that was Nketiah's thing. He was great goal poacher, waiting for the ball to come in, bang, yeah, goal. But when it wasn't there, when the balls weren't being crossed in, what was he doing? Not a lot. That was it, really.
It's going to be a big couple of weeks for him moving forward. And Joel, there was another turning point or another key night for Nicolas Pepe. His 100th Arsenal appearance, a goal, two assists on the night for him. And again, he's in a similar position to Nketiah, that you get the impression that it's now or never in terms of his Arsenal career. He's another person that could potentially benefit from Aubameyang-gate or Uber-gate or however you want to phrase it. And depending on when Mikel Arteta decides to bring him back in from the cold, there is going to be opportunities for these players. Now, Nicolas Pepe, for me, as an Arsenal fan, I always think of one thing when I think of Nicolas Pepe, which is he gets the ball, he does that big shoulder dip, then comes to cut back inside and just boots it over the bar. He does. That's every time I think of Nicolas Pepe, that's what I think of. And looking at his numbers, I would personally say there's a little bit of stat padding going on here in terms of what he's done. 15 goals in the Premier League across 2.5 seasons. For someone who is still Arsenal's record transfer, when we go back to when he joined in 2019, £72 million to bring him in from Lille. And he has, for me, massively fallen short. But yes, it is Sunderland, and yes, there's other variables at play last night, but there is these little flickers where you go, maybe you're not worth 72 million, but you're not worth 72 quid. He is also in that position that if he doesn't kick on now, you've got to ask yourself, with Smith Rowe and with Saka, where his Arsenal career is going.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Gabriel Martinelli who's breathing down his shoulder now in terms of a starting place. And with Nicolas Pepe, I've always seen him as he's a very flash in the pan type of player. I mean, prior to him actually joining Arsenal when he was at Lille, he scored 22 goals in his penultimate season there. And he was the go-to man in that squad in terms of getting the goals. But I just don't know if he actually fits the way in which Arteta wants to play. Because when you have someone like Martinelli who, you know, he has the ability to press, or you have Smith Rowe who has the ability to press, whereas, you know, Nicolas Pepe is a little bit more nonchalant on the pitch. He's more of the kind of the player who, when you give him the ball, yeah, he can make something happen, but he kind of drifts out of the game when you don't have the ball. And I think Arteta likes every single player in his team to be a little bit more proactive. But regardless of off the ball stuff, it's the things that he does on the ball that matter, and he's done far and few between. I mean, like you said, his stats for Arsenal have been very, very underwhelming. Obviously, last season he got his best return of 10 goals in the league, which, you know, is a decent return, but I think this is the issue. I know you mentioned the 72 million, but the 72 million, it doesn't necessarily mean he's a 72 million pound player. I think it's the same with, like, for example, Harry Maguire. Everyone thinks you're expecting to get 80 million pounds worth of talent, but in reality, in the first place, that both of the players are not worth anywhere near that amount. It's purely just the fact that that was the price they had to pay to get him out of the club because they meant so much to their respective clubs. And, you know, Nicolas Pepe, for two very good seasons in France, it was still a very, very high overpayment by Arsenal. Obviously, hindsight is great, but even when they did the purchase, there were a lot of eyebrows raised of just how much they had paid for him. Considering a couple of seasons before that, they wanted to pay nearly 90 million for Thomas Lamar. The recruitment hasn't been great, and it seems to me that they're having way, way more success going for these more well thought out recruitment. Recruited players, like the likes of Ben White, like the likes of Tavares and Ramsdale, the ones where they have a point to prove, whereas Pepe came in as one of the best young talents in Europe and he's really just not lived up to it. And at age 26, that's a pivotal moment in a player's career, I feel, where, you know, he's been there for a good, 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's more than enough time to kind of prove your worth at a side and acclimatise and get used to your manager and your city. And it's just not happened for him the way in which I don't think many people thought it should have. And I think after this season, I think it's quite telling the fact that he can only get into League Cup games at the moment. If he's not able to break into the Premier League squad at the moment, and by looking at how well they're playing in the league and how well the youngsters are doing, who cost 10% of what he cost, I think that Arsenal may be looking to cut their losses a little bit and potentially move on from that, because I don't think he's offering what Arteta needs, in my opinion.
Just looking at the competition itself, before we take a break, Ian, it's an interesting one with the Carabao Cup or the League Cup, or going back to its previous incarnations, Carling Cup, Coca-Cola Cup, Milk Cup, all the way back when. It has had a bit of a rebirth in the last few years. It was rebranded and reformatted in 2016-17, and now you're in a position where if you're a Premier League side, when you come in the third round, if you've been playing in Europe, you could feasibly face six games against six Premier League teams, with obviously the semi-finals being two legs. And it is difficult to get all the way through. You've got to battle to make sure that you're not kind of losing out, you don't field a weakened team, so then you get turned over, you've got to get the balance right. And it has become quite an interesting watch, because it was in danger of just falling off a cliff, the big team's not taking an interest, and Pep Guardiola's been maybe a key ingredient in all that. He takes it very seriously. Obviously Man City have dominated the competition since he's come into the Etihad. So at the moment we're in a position whereby this was a competition that was probably an afterthought 5 or 10 years ago, but now it's come back to the forefront as being something that your Arsenals, your Tottenhams, your Chelseas and obviously your Cities want to get their hands on.
Yeah, I think it is. Well, I think the team that devalued it first were Arsenal, I've got to say. They were the ones who started playing second strings in the Wenger days, way, way back. Man United followed suit, as you say. All the big boys then sort of copied that. And before you know it, you know, you've got youth teams coming out, and it did devalue it a little bit from the point of view of the teams further down the food chain, who don't get many opportunities to play against Premier League sides, whoever they are, but particularly those top teams, like, you know, you get drawn against Arsenal, even just taking into account Sunderland's match yesterday. Sunderland, of course, are still a League One team, as it turns out at the moment. But for any team in League One or League Two, if you got drawn against Arsenal or Man United or Liverpool, yeah, you want your day out at their ground, but you also want to face up against the best, don't you? You want to try yourself against the best. You don't want to play against Arsenal thinking you've played against the kids. You know, it does take the shine off it. And so well done to those teams who are putting fairly strong sides out. I mean, I know that they always, usually most teams make some changes for a League Cup game, but that's fine. But as long as there's a few of the big hitters in there, it does have extra value to them. And you know, Sunderland, conversely, also are one of the teams that made it to the final a few years back. I went to Wembley last time. It was a great day out, fantastic. Got absolutely pasted by Man City, but you know, it was still a great day out. And for fans as well, you know, that's what they want. They want that day out. They want to get to Wembley. They don't care what the competition is, you know. And I think it's only the teams at the top of the Premier League who see it as a lesser competition. If you're a team in the Championship, in League One or League Two, it's not a devalued competition at all, because it's a potential route to Wembley and all that goes with it, playing against top sides or certainly sides further up the food chain than you. So yeah, I don't think it has lost its magic. It's only the teams and maybe the fans of teams who are used to playing in Champions League and all this kind of stuff where maybe it has lost its value. I don't think it really did lose its spark further down the leagues, to be honest, because of the prize, you know, day out in Wembley, trophy, open top bus parade, all that kind of stuff.
So Arsenal, obviously, through to the last four. Mikel Arteta's side, as Ian mentions, are still potentially on the road to Wembley. We're going to grab a quick break. After the break, we'll be reviewing three all Premier League clashes tonight. Two London derbies as Brentford host Chelsea and Spurs take on West Ham, plus Brendan back at Anfield. There's only three places up for grabs on the road to Wembley. We're going to be getting some predictions and guessing how the last four picture is going to be shaping up in 2022. We'll be back in just a second.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. And just a quick reminder, here at FSD, we are your daily source of all things Premier League. And despite it being the festive season, we are here every single day with a brand new podcast. If you click subscribe on this episode, you can get access to a brand new show right the way across Christmas as soon as it is ready. Right then, before the break, we looked at last night's action. Arsenal booked their place in the Carabao Cup last four, cruising past Sunderland with a 5-1 win at the Emirates. We're going to preview tonight's action. Ian, I'm going to go to you first on this. Brentford against Chelsea. Now, Brentford probably find themselves in a bit of a stick or twist situation. Premier League form has stabilised in recent weeks. They had a sticky October, four straight defeats: Chelsea, Leicester, Burnley and Norwich. But they've bounced back since then. A draw against Newcastle, they beat Everton, they beat Watford, draw against your boys Leeds. It's only Spurs that have beaten them in the last 6 weeks. But Thomas Frank faces a decision tonight. They've not faced Premier League opposition so far in the competition, so they've made wholesale changes to get to this stage. Forest Green, Oldham and Stoke haven't really provided that much of an issue for them. The priority, obviously, for Thomas Frank and Brentford is the league. They're still managing a COVID situation at the club. Ivan Toney's more than likely going to miss out. How does he play this tonight? They've got a really busy schedule coming up over Christmas. Brighton on Boxing Day, Man City on the 29th, and then Villa on the 2nd of January. Does he stick or does he twist?
I think that he's probably going to continue with consistency. Because, you know, he's got a formula that's working. Yes, they've got a busy time coming up. But as we were mentioning before, you know, for teams lower down, the League Cup is a great opportunity for them. And I think if you're Brentford, surely you're going to see this as an opportunity to get a Chelsea squad that are weakened because they've got COVID problems, they've got injuries, they've got a manager who is whinging about having to play football matches. Can you imagine the shock horror? You know, they've got all these matches over Christmas and Tuchel not happy about having to play them and he hasn't got his full squad. And oh, it's the annual violin, isn't it? There's always a few managers doing it, and it's usually the ones that are playing the Champions League games and all that are moaning about the struggles of being a football manager with all these football matches. And I think that it's an opportunity. I think that Chelsea, we were talking about those teams at the top, not taking it seriously. I think Chelsea are ripe for that. I don't think that they're in the zone for this match at all. As I say, they haven't got their first choice side. Brentford should be fired up for it. They've had fairly good consistency, as you say, over the last few matches or so. I think Chelsea are there for the taking tonight. I've got to be honest. I think he'll put a weakened team out by Premier League or Champions League standards. I mean, I'm sure there'll still be some, you know, decent stars in and among there. But I just think Brentford, they've been a very tricky team, haven't they? And they always have been. You know, and I'm surprised in a way that it's taken them so long to get to the Premier League, because they've always been there or thereabouts for the last few years. You know, when Leeds were trying to get promoted, Brentford were always a thorn in the side. And they're a good team. Thomas Frank keeps them well drilled, and I see no reason why Brentford can't do it tonight. I really do. I think that could be the upset this evening.
Joel, looking at the situation with Chelsea, Thomas Tuchel as Ian points out, has been one of the big proponents of this idea of pushing for a circuit breaker in the Premier League because of a rise in positive cases. And he said that he's going to have to start from scratch in terms of picking a team for tonight's game. He had to play players at the weekend that he didn't want to play. N'Golo Kante's only just back from injury. He now is going to be rested. So there's in and around 9, maybe even 10 first-team players that are going to be out for the game tonight. And just looking at their record in the previous round, they have struggled. They needed penalties to get past Southampton, and they needed penalties to get past Villa just to get to this stage in the competition. Now, on paper, even a weakened Chelsea side, you would imagine they would still best Brentford, even away from home. But the stars do seem to be aligning, as Ian says. There's a lot of players out for Chelsea. Tuchel is frustrated. He knows that he needs to start getting points on the board in the Premier League. It's not that they've not taken the League Cup seriously so far this season, but they've found it tough going. They've had an extra half an hour and penalties tacked on to both of the previous rounds. There's a real window of opportunity for Brentford here, but that's more than likely going to come if Tuchel just plays a weakened team and they can power through.
Yeah, I think Brentford will definitely fancy the chances tonight, as Ian said. I think that the Chelsea game is probably the most favourable team they could face out of any of the other teams that are playing. I mean, Chelsea have only got one win in the last five Premier League games, and that's with a pretty fully strength side, obviously missing a couple of additions, like obviously Lukaku's been out, Jorginho and Kante have been out of the side, but even still, some of these games have been a real grind for Chelsea at the moment, and it all started after that 1-1 draw against Manchester United at the end of November. Since then, they've gone on a real downfall of form, and so much so they've lost their top of the table position, which they held for quite a while, and now find themselves 4 or 5 points adrift of the top. And then obviously, as we fast forward to the League Cup, I think, you know, with this virus situation, I said it in the podcast the other day, it doesn't discriminate against one team. Every team has got to suffer from the consequences of either A, the virus, or B, the fact that they're not as invested in as the bigger clubs. I mean, these big clubs can compete on all fronts because they've got huge squads. Brentford, if they have a COVID outbreak, they're going to have to dip into probably the under-12s to get some players going. And I mean, you know, if Chelsea lose, for example, Lukaku, or they lose Thiago Silva, they've got Rudiger, or they've got Christensen, or they've got X, Y, and Z to replace him. Or Lukaku, they can field any other striker that they've got. Werner can play there. You can play Pulisic as a false nine. With Brentford, if you lose Ivan Toney, there's not many players who you can rely upon to actually take his place. So I don't really buy into this fact that there's an unfair competitive advantage in terms of, you know, some teams have it worse than others, but take away the virus and there's an unfair competitive advantage regardless. And that's the fact that Chelsea's team is worth probably $500 million and Brentford's team has been barely even invested in. So, you know, it's been luck of the draw in terms of what teams have suffered so far. But regardless of that, Chelsea are in real danger, I think, tonight of going out, just purely because their form has been atrocious in this last 3 weeks in its entirety. And I think Thomas Tuchel will definitely be concerned with the fact that they just can't close games out, especially defensively, considering how well they were defensively. I think they'd only conceded around 5 goals up until October, mid-November, and then it suddenly just capitulated and they conceded double that after that time. So I think in terms of, you know, going away to Brentford, where the atmosphere is usually pretty bouncing there, the fans really are enjoying their time in the top flight at the moment. I think it's a golden opportunity, and I know that the league is the priority, but I mean, they've put themselves in a really good position where they're on 20 points in the league at the moment, a good 8 points adrift of safety. So, you know, this that gives them a really good cushion to just go and attack this. I'm sure all their fans would rather see them go fully strength team, go for it against the Chelsea side who are depleted, who are in bad form, who are there for the taking. And I mean, a semi-final, after that, a semi-final, it's whoever's is on the day's the better team. And obviously, I'm sure they'd fancy themselves going into the next game. But I think, yeah, judging out of every other team, I think Chelsea are definitely, even with a second string side, even more so there for the taking.
So you're going for Brentford win tonight?
Yeah, I would definitely say so.
Ian, give us your call. Brentford to win or Chelsea to scrape it?
Well, I think if Chelsea do it, it will be a scraping job. I think Brentford to do it. You know, I'd say that they're a tricky team. A couple of quick early goals and they'll defend the life out of it. It's kind of playing Chelsea at their own game. But I suspect that Brentford's team will have more experience among it than Chelsea's squad for tonight's game, I think. See ya, Brentford.
I'm gonna disagree, and Joel and I will be on tomorrow defending or arguing about these choices. I'm gonna go with Chelsea. Head says Chelsea, heart says Brentford, because I'd like to see them do it. But even with players missing, I still think Chelsea will have enough to squeeze through. So I'm going for Chelsea, but I'm 2-1 outvoted on that one. Right, let's move on. Liverpool against Leicester. This is a dress rehearsal, Ian, for the Premier League game at the King Power between these two teams on the 28th. But in reality, the teams that are going to be playing tonight, the starting 11s in comparison to that game, are probably worlds apart. Liverpool going into it are missing 4 players due to positive COVID-19 tests. Andy Robertson, in case you haven't heard, was sent off against Spurs at the weekend, so he's banned. And Leicester, talk about a defensive crisis. Brendan Rodgers might have to play centre-back because Johnny Evans, Charles Soyuncu, Yannick Vestergaard, Wesley Fofana and Filip Benkovic are all out injured. Now, Ian, looking at Liverpool's situation, under Klopp, they don't have a great record in this competition. In his first 6 months or so, they did finish runners-up. They lost to City in the 2016 final. But based on the last 4 years, they've only been beyond the fourth round once. I'm not saying he's not prioritised it, but he kind of hasn't prioritised it. And based on situation, given the fact that they're chasing City down in the Premier League title race, City are now out of the competition, could they be maybe distracted a little bit? I know Leicester are not in the greatest of form, but Liverpool don't have a brilliant pedigree in this competition, and this could be the fence that they fall at.
Yeah, possibly. I think, as you say, Liverpool have not been... I mean, but Liverpool used to have a bit of a history with this tournament. If you know, I remember going back years.
They did. They're joint with City.
Yeah,
as most
exactly.
Successful.
So they have got form with it. It's not like they've never won it by any stretch of the imagination. As you say, though, I think in Liverpool's position, you know, the Premier League is obviously a priority, and so is the Champions League and probably the FA Cup. Fair enough. You would fancy, in, as you say, on paper, that Liverpool can do this. I think Liverpool will roll the dice. I think they'll probably will bring various players into the side that maybe haven't played so much, and give some of those stars in the Liverpool camp a bit of a run out. Probably a bit like Arsenal did, you know, for various players to make their cases for the busy period that's coming up. Although hopefully they don't go too big, because they've got Leeds to face on Boxing Day, and we want Liverpool to be as weak as possible for that one. wishful thinking, Santa. This. Do you know what? If any of the fixtures tonight have got penalty shootout written all over them, I think this possibly could be it. Mm. I think it'll be a fairly tight game. I don't see it being a huge goal fest on either side, and yeah, I just fancy that it's going to be, you know, there's not going to be much between it. I think it might be one of those that needs a little bit of penalty action to settle it, the extra added drama at about 10 o'clock tonight.
And if that does happen, looking at the statistics so far this season, Joel, Leicester would have the edge. They got through on penalties against Brighton in the previous round. Pretty straightforward for Liverpool in their two games. 3-0 away at Norwich and 2-0 away at Preston. Leicester, as I mentioned, are missing everybody, pretty much everybody that they could play at centre-back. I'm concerned at who is going to be marking the Liverpool attackers this evening. But it's a difficult one to gauge with Leicester so far this season, because they've been up and they've been down. They've won games that maybe you didn't expect them to win. Then they've dropped silly points against teams that they should be comfortably beating, and putting themselves in a position to really challenge for the Champions League spots. Do you think this could be maybe a bit of a break from the day job? They've got a difficult run of games over Christmas. City away on Boxing Day. Then obviously Liverpool, as you mentioned, on the 28th. But given the injuries, is it maybe too much for Rodgers to go back to Anfield and get a result?
Yeah, I think so. I think even prior to their squad having, you know, virus cases and whatnot, defensively they've suffered massively this season. Like you said, they've been so unpredictable in terms of the results that they've been given. Where, you know, obviously they lose against a strange side, and then they get a victory a week later, and then they lose in against Moscow, and it's been very, very topsy-turvy for Leicester this season, which I didn't predict, considering, you know, how consistent they've been in the last two seasons consecutively. But I think with this game, Liverpool, regardless of who they have out, that front line is just too much for majority of the sides at the moment. Obviously against Spurs, I think Spurs were quite unlucky to actually get a victory against them midweek. Just in terms of, I saw a little bit of weakness, but obviously I think it's probably the case that, you know, Van Dijk's out, and I think he makes a huge difference in that defence, needless to say. But with Leicester, I think the biggest miss for them, and it has been all season, is Wesley Fofana. Considering just how well he played last season, and the teams that are lining up apparently to sign him, including the likes of, you know, Real Madrid, Chelsea have been in talk, have been thought to be interested as well. It just testament to how well he's been playing. But I think Liverpool at home, you know, it's very rare that they end up dropping games there, or they lose and go out of a competition there. And I think it's just a little bit, a step too far for Leicester at the moment. And like you said, you know, they just scraped past Brighton in the previous round in the League Cup. So I think Liverpool should comfortably go through tonight. They're in great form, and I think in the semi-finals, it'd be great if they could probably get, you know, who's the other team that are in the...
So it'll be Arsenal as it stands, and then it'll either be the winners of Brentford, Chelsea, and then obviously the other one, Spurs, West Ham.
Aye. So, yeah, I think Hopefully, if Liverpool do get through, they can get one of Tottenham or West Ham or Arsenal, and then obviously Brentford can go and win the whole thing. But yeah, I think Liverpool should have way too much for Leicester tonight, and I can see them comfortably going through.
Ian, Liverpool haven't lost at home since March. They lost to Fulham on March 7th. Mario Lemina with the winner for the Cottagers. Joel's going for a Liverpool win. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think they might just scrape through, but as I say, I think it might require penalties. I fancy the main game to be pretty tight, to be honest. I think it's I can't really pick it, honestly. I just think with Liverpool's changes they're going to make and slightly weakened side, Leicester of course are without a fair few of their own, but I don't know. I can't split it. Penalties. Brendan Rodgers, the drama.
I'm going to go for Liverpool. I think it could go the distance. It might go to penalties, but I just think Liverpool will have enough. And based on the situation at Leicester, they could be having Philbert Fox at the back and Gary Lineker up front. So, yeah, I'm going for Liverpool to win this one. Right, final game, Ian, Spurs against West Ham. Antonio Conte's come into Tottenham. A little bit of a Freudian slip there. And he's done pretty well, been impressive. They looked good against Liverpool at the weekend, got themselves a draw, but the big thing with Spurs is this idea of winning a trophy. It hung heavy on Mauricio Pochettino's shoulders. You've got to go all the way back to 2008 and the glory days of Juan de Ramos to get their last trophy, which was this competition, the League Cup. They beat Chelsea in the final. They've had a difficult run in the last month. They've had a string of games called off, the weather at Burnley, and then obviously the situation with COVID. They're bowed out of the Europa Conference League, which, depending on which Spurs fan you ask, they might be pleased or they might be frustrated at that. West Ham, on the other hand, in this competition have looked really, really good. They beat United away and they've also beat City, who are the defending champions. So they've got good pedigree. How do you see this one going down?
Yeah, again, another tight one, I reckon. But I think this is one for West Ham to win. I know that Tottenham have got this, you know, win a trophy and stuff. But I think even still, I just fancy that there's going to be that temptation ahead of Christmas. I know that they've had various problems with COVID and stuff, and maybe a mixture of some of their side not being fully, you know, match sharp. I'm not saying match fit, but, you know, sharp, because they've not had that competitive action quite so much as say, West Ham. And I don't know, West Ham seem to have a fair amount of momentum with them at the moment, because they've been doing all right in the Premier League. And again, for a side like West Ham, surely the Carabao Cup has got to be a you know, there for the taking. It's you know, within their grasp in terms of, you know, they're one of the better sides left in it. They've been playing all right. And you know, come the reckoning of the season, maybe like last year, they might just sort of run out of steam in terms of qualifying for Europe or the Champions League. So this is another route to that. Will they do it at the Tottenham ground, though? That's the thing. It's, you know, if this was a fixture at the London Stadium, I would be saying this is West Ham's absolutely. But that's just the bit of the unknown. Really, I can't really. Can't really split it. My hunch is with West Ham, really. I just, because of their momentum that they've got so far. Tottenham have been fairly indifferent, haven't they? On the, you know, that could work in their favour though, because, you know, without the pressure of the league and everything that's gone with them, we could probably see, you know, if they play Harry Kane, see him, you know, getting a hat trick or more, and really firing back to form. I think it'll be, I don't think there'll be much in the way of middle ground with this one. I think this one will be all sorted in regular time. But yeah, I fancy West Ham just to nick it though.
Jim will be delighted. Ian's hunch is West Ham to win this. Joel, Spurs obviously have had that COVID-enforced break. They came back against Liverpool this weekend. West Ham have kind of been a little bit in and out, particularly in terms of the Premier League, but they've generally managed to pick up a point, if not a win, in most of their games in the last few weeks. How do you see this one going down?
I do fancy Tottenham, and that's purely just off the back of that draw with Liverpool. I thought they played really well in that game, in terms of, you know, obviously being one of very few sides to actually stop Liverpool this season. And obviously amid all of the COVID scenario going around at that club at the moment, I think a big part of that game was the fact that Harry Kane managed to actually get on the score sheet for once, which I never thought I'd say. But yeah, it's his second goal this season in the Premier League, which is totally uncharacteristic of someone of his quality. But I think Conte will definitely see this game as, you know, is probably their only credible opportunity to actually win something this season. I would have said West Ham maybe a month ago, but their form has really took a bit of a tail dip. I know that, you know, Antonio has gone a good amount of games, I think nearly a month now, without a goal. They've lost a couple of games on the bounce in the league, but obviously, you know, they played Manchester City and Arsenal, which, you know, are not the easiest games to play. But, you know, it's a cup football, and I definitely wouldn't rule out the fact that, you know, West Ham will also probably see this as their most likely opportunity to get a trophy as well, and it's probably the biggest one they've had in years. But no, I do fancy Tottenham tonight, and I think Conte's really starting to solidify that side a little bit more than he previously has done. They're on a good run of form at the moment. They've not lost since, I think it was the Manchester United game on the 30th of October, which is really encouraging. Obviously, if you take away the default 3-0 defeat against Stade Rennais, which dumped them out of Europe without them even playing. But yeah, I've been more encouraged with Tottenham than, let's say, the start of the season under Nuno, which just looked like it was just sinking quicker than the Titanic at the start. So I think, yeah, I would fancy Tottenham tonight to go through.
Yep, I'm going to agree. I'm going to go with Spurs through to the last four as well. But as I mentioned earlier on, Joel, myself and Marley will be here tomorrow reviewing those games, and you can check out just how right or probably wrong we were with our predictions. We're going to call it there for Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Ian, Joel, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Great stuff, guys. And don't forget to hit subscribe on this podcast episode. We are here right the way through the festive period with a daily Premier League podcast. If you're a fan of the podcast, you can get access to it as soon as it is ready. We are available wherever you get your podcasts: Spotify, Acast, Castbox, the whole shebang. Just give us a click and you can check out the latest episode. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.